tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Hey, everyone. This is Kristen. I'm the technical tabby here at the Community Cats Podcast, and I'm just popping in to thank you so much for tuning in today and to let you know that we're doing something a little special with this episode. This is the audio version of a webinar we hosted earlier this year called Targeted TNR, Getting the Most Bang for Your Buck. And that was done with our friends at Neighborhood Cats. And it's one that I really think you're going to get a lot out of. The session is part one of a two-part look at Targeted TNR led by Brian Cordes. He's the National Programs Director for Neighborhood Cats. If you've ever wondered why your TNR efforts sometimes feel a little scattered or why you're not seeing the results you're hoped for, this is going to connect a lot of dots for you. Brian walks us through the why behind concentrating your resources. So that's what happens when you focus on high need areas, how colony level strategy works, and why concepts like carrying capacity and vacuum effect actually matter a lot more than maybe people realize. You'll also hear real world case studies where targeted TNR completely shifted outcomes for shelters and communities. So that means fewer complaints, fewer intakes, and a lot more stability on the ground. Whether you're part of a grassroots rescue, or you're running a clinic, or you're involved in TNR, or working in municipal animal services, this session is going to offer some practical guidance on how you can scale in your own community. All right, so with that, let's jump into part one of our targeted TNR series with Brian Cordes. I hope you find it as insightful as we did too. I want to welcome you guys to our incredible webinar, Targeted TNR and Getting the Most Bang for Your Buck. It's part of our TNR program management training series, and this is presented in partnership with Neighborhood Cats. So I'm going to introduce you to our speaker because I am dying to get right into this. Brian Cordes served as Neighborhood Cats' National Program Director and Susie Richmond's husband. Back in 1999, while working in Manhattan as both an attorney and a video director, Brian co-founded Neighborhood Cats after TNRing a colony where he lived. Except for a six-year stint as a grants manager over at PetSmart Charities, he has been with the organization ever since. He's authored or co-authored handbooks on grassroots TNR, community TNR, and return to field programs. Like I said, you have some incredible expertise here, so take advantage. You can always find him online where he regularly presents both basic and advanced webinars on all things trap, neuter, return in partnership with the Community Cats podcast. And we are so grateful to have him.
Thank you so much, Kristen. And thanks, everybody, for taking time out today to learn more about advanced level trap, neuter, return and program management. So let's get into the topic for today. And first, you know, what is the problem that we're trying to solve with targeting? And, well, the answer is there's too many cats, but too few surgeries, trappers, traps, you know, other TNR resources. And that's pretty much a common scenario wherever you go, is that there are more cats than there are resources at any one time to address them all. So how do we maximize the impact of the resources that we do have? Is that's the problem we're trying to solve. And just real, you know, in real summary fashion, which of course we'll be going into this in a lot more detail, the solution that I'm proposing today is what we call targeting. And we define targeting as maximizing your impact by concentrating limited resources in an area of high need. And if you just look at this kind of little graphic that we have on the slide right now, you've got cats all over the place, but if we have a limited number of surgeries, we can't fix all these cats at the same time. You know, rather than scatter our spay neuters and catch one at one house and a couple at another, we decide we're going to identify the household with the most cats and use our surgeries there. And of course, that's a very simple version of what we're talking about. But just to give you an overall sense of what the idea is that's an area of high need. That's where we're going to have the most impact and be able to control our overpopulation the most. So breaking this down, what are the elements of targeting? So as I mentioned, we're assuming we have limited resources. If that's not your situation, congratulations, and send me an email so we can come work there. You're concentrating these resources, meaning you're not spreading them necessarily throughout your service area, but you're focusing them. And you're focusing them in a geographic area. When we talk about target areas, we're defining them by geography. it's going to be an area of high need, and we want to maximize impact. And that could be fewer cats, lower intake into the shelter, also lower euthanasia, and then possibly another goal is fewer complaints about cats. And I want to mention at the outset, so there's not confusion about this, my suggestion is not that you should devote all of your resources to targeting. But it should be one part of your strategy. So if you're a spay-neuter clinic, for example, and you're turning out 5,000 spay-neuter surgeries a year for your service area, then maybe you put 1,000 of those aside and you work with some trappers or a nonprofit group, and you identify that high need area in your community, and you spend those 1,000 surgeries on that area. So there are other things that are part of the TNR program that we talk about in other webinars, like building grassroots support, getting a lot of people to do this, return to field programs. So it's not that everything in your program, and I'm talking about whether you're a large spay-neuter clinic or a smaller TNR group who's, you know, maybe doing several hundred surgeries a year, some part of what you do, we recommend, is spent on targeting. Now, targeting in terms of trap-neuter return is a relatively new concept, It's been around for about 10 years now, but still not widely adopted in my experience. It's not a new concept for other fields, and I wanted to give you a couple of examples so you better understand what the concept is. So what you're looking at in this slide, this was back in the early 2000s in New York City, and you're looking at a map of New York City. And on the right, that river in the middle is the Hudson River. On the left is New Jersey. On the right is New York City. Real high crime at that time. And the police department decided to adopt a targeted strategy to try to bring the homicide, mostly the homicide rate in this case, to try to bring that down. So the first thing they did is they mapped where all the homicides took place. And over the period of 6-7 years. And those are all the green dots, or actually all the dots that you see on the map are where a homicide took place. And then the green is with a gun, and I know it's a little gruesome, but just stay with me. And the orange is with a knife. And you can see how the homicides were not concentrated, they weren't scattered evenly across New York City, but you can see there's a few areas towards the north of the Bronx and then in the center of Brooklyn, where there was a high concentration of them. So they used this mapping to then allocate police resources. And that's the map you see on your left. And the darker the color, the more concentrated the police resources were. So those dark reds are where the most police activity took place. And if you compare that to the map we just looked at on your right now, you can see how the police activity was most concentrated naturally where there had been the most homicides. And they did this for several years, and it dramatically, there were definitely some constitutional issues with the stop and frisk and stuff like that. But from the vantage point of did they reduce crime, the answer was absolutely. They brought homicides way down to like the lowest it had been in decades. This is another example of targeting in another field. This is a map of poverty in New York City. And where you see the deepest red are the concentrations of where the income levels were the lowest. Not coincidentally, that overlaps with where the crime was highest. And so this map was used to allocate in New York City government, where to allocate poverty related resources, like where to put food banks or where to put social services offices, community health clinics, things like that. So again, you're surging your resources into the areas of highest need. And that's what we're trying to do with cats too. Now, there's another kind of targeting besides geographic that's called demographic targeting. And this is an example. This is the typical audience of a podcast. I don't think it's around anymore, but this was their audience at the time that they were active. And you could see it was 68% male, more than half married. Most of them had kids. So if you were after married men with families, this would be the podcast for you, right? If you were advertising and that was your target, that was the audience you wanted to reach. That's an example of demographic targeting. And that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about TNR. We're talking about geographic targeting, not demographic. So yes, to the map on the left, if that area in white is your geographic target area, you're going to go in there and try to fix as many cats as you can, as opposed to on the right, where you say, like, we're going to target elderly caretakers. So, I mean, that may be a worthwhile thing to do, but that's not the kind of targeting we're talking about today. So let's get into the nitty gritty of this. And here we have a 10 cat colony in the backyard. Looks like Florida to me, based on those palm trees. And in our hypothetical here, none of these cats are fixed and no TNR has been done. So my question to you, and you can pop your answers in the question box, is if we do nothing, we do absolutely nothing, no TNR, no spay neuter, in a couple of years, what is this colony going to look like in terms of population size? What do you think? Unmanageable, cats will take over the world, hundreds, any other ideas? 17, hundreds of cats, somebody wrote stable, really bad, 100 times more. So the majority opinion seems to be that it's going to look like this, right? We're just going to have out of control breeding and we're going to end up with hundreds or thousands of cats all over the place. So that's not true. And it's very important that we understand at the outset of today why that's not true. And it's because of a concept that's very important for people who do TNR to understand, and that's called carrying capacity. And that's important with respect to targeting and TNR in general. And carrying capacity is how many animals can a particular environment or location support at any one time. So we all grew up in the TNR field with this, right? Everybody seen this? An unspayed female, you know, if she, you know, reproduces and then her kittens reproduce and da 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 da, you know, in 7 years you have, you know, 6 kajillion cats, right? And that's why we tell people it's so important to get the cats fixed, because that one unspayed female cat can end up being hundreds of thousands of cats 7 years from now. Now, of course, if that was true, it'd be pretty hard to take a step outside anywhere without stepping on a cat, right? So why isn't that true? And it's that idea of carrying capacity. So carrying capacity, how many cats a particular environment can support, is limited by the factors that are listed here. How much food is available? Now, of course, that can change, you know, especially with cats, people can put more food out. But at some point, there's going to be a limit, because there's other factors too, which is how much shelter is available, you know, adequate shelter for the cats. Kitten mortality rates are very high among outdoor cats. The type and the size of the territory, you know, a small territory and a rough terrain isn't going to support as many cats as a nice open field next to the woods. Also, the tolerance of neighbors, what we refer to often as social tolerance, you know, the neighborhood may be okay with 10 cats in the backyard there, but if it gets to 20, then people start to get upset and they call in, try to have the cats removed, or, you know, unfortunately, the cruelty can start to happen as hostility rises. So all of these factors, food, shelter, kitten mortalities, type of territory, tolerance, all work to put a cap on the number of cats. Also, somebody mentioned in the questions box, lots of wild animals in certain areas. That's true too. You may have coyotes predating. All these things limit the number of cats that a particular area can support. So let's go back to our 10 cat colony. And we're understanding that actually there's a cap. There's a limit to how many cats this neighborhood's going to support, and that's 10. So if you actually, the answer is if you did absolutely nothing and you came back in 2 years, you would still have 10 cats. You wouldn't have hundreds or 1,000. You wouldn't have fewer. You'd be around 10. So let's do something and let's TNR 3 of these cats, okay? So now 3 of them are fixed and they can't reproduce. So let me ask you again, if we come back in 2 years, now what's it going to look like in terms of the population now that we've spayed and neutered 3 of these cats? And let's say there are 3 females just for, or 2 females and 1 male. What's it going to look like? You guys aren't too quick to respond this time. Okay, same, grow to carrying capacity, stable, same, still hundreds, same, 10 cats. Okay, you guys got it. That's the correct answer. It will still be 10 cats, even though you fix 3 of them. And the reason for that is because you'll have helped those 3 cats. They'll be healthier. They'll live longer lives probably. But the reproductive capacity of the colony has not significantly changed. There are still 7 unaltered cats, and they'll be able to reproduce more than enough to keep the population at the carrying capacity. Remember, it's 10. So those other 7 cats are going to have multiple litters of kittens between them. Enough of them will survive that the carrying capacity of the environment will be met. And you'll come back in 2 years and 3 cats will be fixed, but you'll still have 10 cats or somewhere near there. So let's say instead of TNRing just 3 cats, we stick with this colony until we've TNR'd all 10 of them. Okay. Now, this is what we call colony level targeting. Okay. That's the term, colony level targeting. And it gives us our best opportunity for population decline and other impacts like fewer complaints and lower intake from this area to the local shelter. Because now that none of them can reproduce, you have your best opportunity for the numbers to actually go down. They do not have reproductive capacity to replace a cat who wanders off, or a cat who dies of old age, or a cat who becomes friendly and is polled and adopted. This population of 10 cats is not within itself going to be able to replenish that that population. So this is why colony level targeting and getting as close as possible to 100% sterilization within just the colony of cats that you're working with is so important for a successful trap neuter return. So I want to, that's beyond our topic for today, but I do want to point out some educational resources we have to train you on how to get to 100%. Because it's not, you know, usually the first 3 cats are pretty easy and the second 4 or 5 are not that hard, but the last 2 can be really tough. So if you haven't taken our TNR certification workshop, that's a very good way to start, because we go over all the basics and we talk about the concept of mass trapping, where you TNR the entire colony at one time. Also, once you get past the basics, we have webinars on the more sophisticated techniques, such as drop trapping, and that's coming up on June 21st. And the drop trap is our favorite way of getting that 10th cat, you know, of getting to 100%. So if that's something you're interested in, check out that webinar. And then finally, there's Trapper Tips and Tricks, where we get into all sorts of advanced trapping techniques. And we already did our version for 2025. That will be available. The recording will be available around June 15th. So you can click this link to sign up for an alert. If you want to get 2024's version, you can click on the link and go into the webinar archive and watch it there. So let's talk about targeting. Now we've kind of gone over targeting on the colony level. Let's talk about it on the community level. And this is our hypothetical town called Ferrellville. And the scenario that we're looking at is, there's a question about, will this count as the TNR certification workshop? This is a certification workshop on targeting, but it's not the basic TNR certification. That's the other workshop. So this is Ferrellville. We have 100 cats, 25 in each of the 4 zip codes, and we only have 20 surgeries. which is, again, that's kind of the common scenario. You can multiply this by 100 if you want to get more realistic, or 10 more realistic numbers. But the concept kind of holds true for almost every community, which is more counts than surgeries. So how do we do this? How do we use targeting to successfully manage this situation? So first off, let's say we have no targeting, right? So we use our 20 surgeries. We just put out an ad on Facebook, you know, post on Facebook, first come, first serve. Within approximately 3.5 minutes, all the spots are gone. You have clinic day, you fix 20 cats, put them back. This is what it looks like. The red circles are cats that have been spayed and neutered. Okay, so we know from what we just talked about that this helps those 20 individual cats for sure. You know, spay neuter makes them healthier, less prone to disease, things like that. But it does nothing for population control. If we come back in a year or two, we're still going to have whatever the carrying capacity is of, say, 100 cats. There'll be no change in the total number. Now, if we employ what we just talked about, which is colony-level targeting, then it's going to look like this instead, right? We're going to have, instead of having scattered random cats, we're going to have colonies, as many as we can get to with our 20 surgeries, that are at or very close to 100% spay-neutered. And within those colonies, we now have our best opportunity to see population control. However, remember the goal of targeting is to maximize the impact of those 20 surgeries that we have. And what in this scenario, there's another question for you. What in the scenario we're looking at is preventing us from still getting the most out of our surgeries that we could? Why is this not the best that we could? It's better than not targeting at all, but why is it not the best that we could do? What is the problem that we're looking at right now? Still scattered results, but maybe, you know, explain that a little bit more. Scattered in what? What specifically is going to happen that doesn't make this ideal too spread out? But what does that mean, though? You have other cats from other areas coming to the areas you've already targeted. Okay, there you go. And there's one term that really explains this very succinctly. The other colonies will grow, maybe not, because they're at carrying capacity, right? Should be where areas overlap. But why is that, Kathy? Okay, your guys are solving this problem. Okay, well, the closest answer was that there'll be other cats moving into areas that have been targeted, right? So that's what we call, and you've heard this term probably a million times, what we call the vacuum effect. And that, like carrying capacity, is an extremely important concept for anybody doing trap neuter return to understand what it means, okay? So you know what carrying capacity is. Now you have to understand its relationship to what we call the vacuum effect. So I'm gonna kind of go through this. I'm not understanding how partial spay and neuters won't lower the population, because the other cats that are not spayed neutered will continue to reproduce, and you'll have as many cats as the environment can support if you don't fix enough of them. That's the answer to that, pet. Okay, so in our hypothetical here, we have 10 cats again. This is a grocery store, in order to simplify our hypothetical. And that garbage can is supposed to be a dumpster, but I couldn't find a dumpster. That is the amount of food that the grocery store puts out every day. And it's only enough food for 10 cats. So even though these cats are not spayed and neutered, their population is always going to be around 10, because that's as much food as there is, right? There isn't enough food for 12 or 11. There's only enough for 10. So let's say somebody's complaining about the cats, you know, the grocery store gets nervous, so they have all the cats removed. Okay, so no more cats. But what's the problem? Why is this not going to work if you don't want cats? The food is still there. That's exactly in the vacuum effect, but what does that mean? Still good provided in the dumpster, right? So there's still food, right? And now that's the vacuum that we're talking about. We have food that's present and there are no cats. And as he wrote, the colony next door will overflow to here. That's exactly right. So this grocery store is not an island unto itself surrounded by moats with alligators. It's part of a neighborhood. And that neighborhood, if there hasn't been TNR activity, also has colonies of cats scattered through it, right? So as now these colonies are at their carrying capacity, right? They've reached the limit of how much their neighborhoods can support. So what happens when a colony reaches its carrying capacity? That's when you start to see things like disease sets in because maybe some of the cats are malnourished. You start to get tomcats killing kittens to reduce competition for resources. You get pregnant cats leaving the colony in search of safer areas so their kittens won't be attacked. And you also have younger cats just migrating out looking for more food sources. So these colonies, and you have new cats who have been lost and abandoned looking for food as well. So the cats that are surrounding this grocery store, a lot of them are in search of new territory and new food sources. And it doesn't take too long. Sometimes it can only literally be a matter of days before Adam and Eve show up at the grocery store. You know, they look around and they say, lots of food, no competition. You know, let's settle down here, you know, and raise a family. And boom, two breeding cycles later, enough kittens survive because there's enough food that you're right back up to 10 cats. Okay. So this is the vacuum effect. The vacuum is at this point is filled. This is why for, you know, decades before, say, let's say, you know, trap neuter return started to grow in popularity in the United States, like in the early 2000s, starting in the early 2000s. It was introduced in the early 1990s, but it started really taking off in the early to mid 2000s and has progressed to today. So it's still a relatively young method. Before that, the primary method for cat control was to remove them. And if they were no homes or they were feral, they were euthanized. And that's why if you look at the 1980s, 1990s, you see a lot of shelters with 80, 90% euthanasia rates for cats. And that's happens much less frequently today, fortunately. But the reason is for what we just went through, because when you just remove cats, the vacuum just gets filled and you just create population turnover. You don't create population reduction.
When we launched the Community Cats podcast, our goal was simple: share stories and strategies to help cat lovers turn their passion into action. But something amazing happened. Our community grew, and so did our mission. Over the years, we've added webinars, conferences, certification courses, downloadable tools, and a whole lot more to support people who care about cats. So it's time for our name to reflect everything we do. The podcast isn't going anywhere, but our overall platform is rebranding as Community Cat Central. It's the same team, the same heart, and the same commitment, just with a fresh new look and even better ways to help you take action for cats in your community. You'll start seeing updates soon, including a brand new website, smarter email tools, and resources that are easier to access and use. We're so grateful to have you on this journey with us, and we can't wait to show you what's next. In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together, whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering. People can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. Hashtag be a helper. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
So let's go back to the beginning of this hypothetical. We have our 10 cats and our source for 10 foods. But now, instead of removing them, we TNR them, okay? We fix them and we put them right back in the grocery store. And since there are 10 cats, they can't reproduce. We come back in a few years and we're down to like 6 cats, okay? And we have population decline, which is part of our goal in terms of why we're doing TNR. So we've made progress in lowering the numbers, but what's the problem? What's the hidden danger here? I will put that out to the questions box. Won't others come to fill the void if other resources are still there? Okay, well, Charlotte's got this down. You're 100% correct. So we're still in a neighborhood surrounded by unaltered colonies of cats who are looking for resources. And every day, remember, every day the grocery store puts out enough food for 10 cats, but now there's only 6 of them. So there's leftover food. There's enough food for 4 more cats. And we've all heard about, you know, one of the advantages to trap neuter return is that the cats guard their territory against new cats coming in. That's only true if there's only enough food for the old cats. If there's more than enough food for the old cats, they don't really have any incentive to keep newcomers away. So what will happen eventually is at least a couple of those cats from the neighborhood are going to move into this colony. The old cats aren't going to keep them out. And you'll have reversed probably not all of the progress that you made, but some of it. And again, we don't want to see progress being reversed. So how do we solve this problem? How do we stop this from happening? Question for you guys. Give them a bare minimum. Pat Finley, you're correct about that. If you are in a caretaker situation where you're putting out food, one thing you can do to prevent this from happening is you can reduce the amount of food you're putting out as the population is declining. And that's very important to do. However, in our hypothetical, there's always enough to grocery store isn't going to stop putting out trash. They're always going to put out the same amount. So there's always going to be enough food for 10. So you don't, that's an excellent answer, but it's not possible in this hypothetical. So in this hypothetical, where we can't reduce the amount of food, what would we do to stop this? Charlotte's got it. We trap the neighboring colonies to 100%. And that is the answer. So after you finished your 10-cat TNR at the grocery store, over the next few years, you are going to all the other colonies in that neighborhood, especially like in a concentric circle, so that you are creating a spayed-neutered zone, a zone where there are no unaltered cats. Now these cats in the surrounding neighborhood are not going to be having that population pressure. They'll be all going down in numbers at the same time. And you'll end up with the grocery store not going backwards. So that is the answer. So in other words, like it, with trap neuter return today, what tends to happen in communities is that we as a field, we go to the grocery store, we fix the 10 cats, we kind of say job well done, which it is, but then we take the next call, which is 5 miles away. And we go fix the 7 cats in somebody's backyard. And then we go to whatever next, you know, appears on our radar, where we could have been using at least some of those surgeries to stay in this neighborhood and to keep the population reduction at a maximum because we're eliminating the vacuum effect. That doesn't mean a new cat can't be abandoned or lost, which is why it's important to have caretakers who can keep an eye out and grab new cats. But you've at least eliminated the main source of the vacuum effect, which is often migration from adjoining cat colonies. So let's go back to our hypothetical where we were only doing colony level targeting in Farrellville. So you'll notice that in zip code number 4, because our colonies were scattered all over town, within zip code number 4, we've only reached a 30% sterilization rate, right? But if we were to do what we call community level targeting and put those resources, all of them, into zip code number 4, like you see here. Now we're at an 80% sterilization level for zip code number 4, and we have our best opportunity for the population to go down. So that's why, now, not that you won't have some vacuum effect at the borders. So that's why once you were done with zip 4, hopefully, you know, stay there and get those last 20% of cats. But if you're going to expand your territory and you said, all right, let's move into zip code number 2, the first ones, colonies you would do would be at the border with zip code number 4, right? You wouldn't go into the far northeast corner of zip code number 2. You'd want to get the ones that are at the border with zip code number 4 as you more and more grow your area of 100% or close to 100% sterilization, and you're minimizing the vacuum effect in that way by going outward, but not all of a sudden just going scattered throughout the rest of the community. So this is what we call community level targeting. A little bit of a sidetrack. How many of you have heard of this thing called the 70% rule? I'm hoping that's dying out, but so yes, you've Pip has heard of it. Charlotte's heard of it. Okay. So let me start by saying there is no rule. It's just a hypothetical, and it turns out to be not a particularly useful one. But the idea came about, and it's sort of the origins of targeting, where there was a veterinarian named Marvin Mackey, and he analogized fixing cats to vaccinating populations against, like, you know, diseases of some sort, say polio or something like that. So within the public health field, you don't have to vaccinate 100% of a population in order to prevent the spread of a disease. There's some threshold you need to reach. And once you've reached that threshold, then enough people are vaccinated that the virus can't spread easily and it starts to die down. He theorized that at a minimum, this was 70%. 70% of the population had to be vaccinated. And that it varies according to disease. Like measles, it has to be like 95%, but some diseases it's closer to 70. He analogized spay neuter to that. And he said, well, if 70% of the cats in a colony are spayed and neutered, that's enough to balance out any reproduction from the remaining 3 and to create population decline. So the general idea that you have to reach a certain level of sterilization in order to have populations go down is a good one. It encourages targeting. But the idea that there's some magical number, like a red line, like 70, is just silly. Because what if those 3 cats is 1 male and 2 females, right? And those 2 females have a litter every year. So that's not going to promote population decline. If it's 3 male cats, that would probably help a lot. So it really depends. And also, there are other issues with outdoor cats and TNR, like we want to be reducing nuisance complaints. Having 3 unaltered cats could still cause a fair amount of commotion. So that's why at Neighborhood Cats, what we say is you want to get as close as you can to 100% spay-neutered. As close. So, look, there's always some cat, you know, in a colony where, you know, you can't spend too, you know, I mean, you can make periodic efforts to catch that last cat, but at some point your energy is better off going to the colony next door. And so you end up with 9 out of 10 until, you know, at some point you finally can catch them. That's understandable. That's why we say as close as you can to 100%. So we're not going crazy about this. Now, another kind of negative byproduct that's come, because one of the negative byproducts of the 70% rule is people think they get 7 out of 10 and then they can leave and go on and everything's fine. And as we've discussed, yeah, as Essie's saying, for cats, it's the 90.99% rule, which is true. So don't think like, oh, I got 7 out of 10, we're all done here. You know, even if you move on, you want to come back at some point and get those last, as many of those last 3 as you can. The problem, another problem that has come out of this rule is that it's been improperly extrapolated by opponents of trap, neuter, return, especially wildlife conservationists, to way beyond the colony level and onto the community level. So there are studies, so-called studies out there, that suggest that TNR is ineffective and will never work because you have to get 70% of the cats fixed in the county or in the entire town before you can have population decline. And that's basically extrapolating from the small unit of the colony to the entire community. And that's just simply not true. As we've just seen, in reality, you can make progress no matter how many searchers you have. If you're targeting, you don't have... I mean, basically, the argument is that so many cats in San Diego County, you know, 83,000 of them, have to be spayed and neutered quickly in order to get population decline, so TNR is futile. That's the argument that they make. That's not true. The reality is that the more colonies that you target close to 100% and the more sections that you target with high sterilization rates, the more population decline you'll have. Now, if you could do 70% of the cats at quickly and you did it in a targeted way, then the population decline would be faster. But you can still make progress no matter how many or how few relatively surgeries you have if you proceed in this targeted manner. You do not have to get 70% of the cats in some arbitrarily defined area spayed and neutered at the same time. That's just kind of nonsense. So don't be fooled by that. So I wanted to show you that this isn't just all theory on my part. We have some real life examples. I worked for a while as a grants manager on TNR grants for PetSmart charities, and this is one of the projects that we funded. This is the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, and that target area is the lighter area you see where it says Busch Gardens, Tampa Bay, University Mall. That was the second highest zip code for cat intake into the county shelter, and they targeted that over the course of about a little over 2 years. They fixed almost 3,000 free-roaming cats in that zip code, and they proceeded very methodically. They had a full-time paid trapper supported by volunteers. They went block by block, moving from the west to the east through the county. So that idea of they were not just TNRing randomly in the zip code, they were moving very methodically to so that there was always a kind of a 100% as close to possible zone behind them as they move forward. Had a wrapped vehicle, they use yard signs like you see here. And these were the results. Was on the left, you can see that within the zip code that was targeted, the population, the intake into the county shelter from that zip code went down by almost half compared to the year before, in 2009, the year before the project started. Meanwhile, in the rest of the county, which was not targeted, you had a much smaller decline. And between 2012, 2013, it actually started to go up in the rest of the county while it was still going down in the targeted area. This is another, this was a research study that was done by Dr. Julie Levy at the University of Florida. She targeted also a zip code. They fixed close to 2,400 cats, and they actually ended up adopting out almost 1,000 of them. So that's another thing you can, you know, of course, do for population reduction is to rehome cats when you can. And again, the results were pretty impressive. The intake from the target zip code went down by 2/3. That's the black line you see on the left. And the euthanasia actually went down, the gray line went down by 95% for cats that were originating from the target zip code. Meanwhile, outside the zip code in the rest of the county, you see intake dropping, but only by 12%, and euthanasia, of course, going down much less. So this is the power of targeting when it's done on this scale. On a smaller scale, take you to the town of Newburyport, Massachusetts, where the founder of the Community Cats podcast, Stacy LeBaron, was working with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. This was like the first community-wide trap-neuter return project that we know of in the States. There were an estimated 300 cats that were living on the riverfront in 1992. And that started to become a problem because it's a tourist area and there are a lot of restaurants on the river. And the cats were starting to become pretty aggressive about trying to get food from people who were dining there. So it was becoming kind of a nuisance and a health issue. So they decided to try to trap neuter return as opposed to trying to just remove them. As they had found, trying to remove them didn't work. Eventually, I mean, it took a long time because remember, this was very new and resources were few and veterinarians available to do this work were not that many. It took them a while. It took them like, I mean, they got the first 200 of the 300 cats fixed pretty quickly, but then the next 100 took more time. But eventually, every single cat was either trapped, neutered, returned, or adopted. And when we get to 2009, I went to visit Stacy, and there was one cat left, and he had 35 feeders. I'm not exaggerating. They had a schedule of people who'd been feeding over the years, and this guy had 25 cats, and he passed away in 2009. So at that point, there were zero cats in the town. And again, you can look at this as a, you know, 100% targeting that took place and eventually eliminated the free roaming cat population. Also want to point to, out to you this study that was done in Tel Aviv, because this is the largest trap neuter return research study that we have available to us at this point. And this was a city that is out just in the Tel Aviv metropolitan area. Population of 240,000 residing in about 10 square miles. And this study took place over the course of 12 years. So it's pretty extensive. And we have a lot we can learn from it about targeting. So this is what the town looks like. The yellow line is the area where these TNR took place. Outside of the yellow line were more like industrial areas where there weren't very many cats or desert or things like that. So within the yellow line was where people lived. And for the first 3 years, all they did was collect data, which basically means they counted cats. Once they knew how many cats were there to begin with, they started their targeting. And initially, what they did was the areas in black, they targeted, and the areas in gray were done much less. They were much more random. So you can see the dots are cats that were fixed. There's a question of how did they count the cats. There's a lot of ways to count cats. You can do what's called transect walks, where you plot a path through a neighborhood at a certain time of day when cats are out, and you count how many you see. And then you come back in 3 months and you do the exact same walk at the exact same time and you count again. You can use camera traps. There's a number of methodologies for counting cats. So during this second phase, they did an intensive spay neuter in the black areas and not very much in the gray areas. And in the black areas, the high intensity, they achieved sterilization rates at 71%, and the gray areas only 33%. So overall, for the entire city, they only got to 51%. And what they found was that the population actually grew, although the areas with the highest intensity, which is the purple around the black, those areas actually were stable. So the areas that were targeted the most intensely, the population remained stable, whereas in the rest of the city, the population was going up. So that didn't work very well, right? So in the next phase, the third phase, which lasted another like 4 years and another 11,000 surgeries, they did high intensity targeting everywhere. And they achieved a rate of 72% for the entire city. At that point, they started to see the population go down. Kittens, interestingly, remained stable, but the overall cat population dropped. And their conclusion was that when you're targeting spatial contiguity. Remember I was talking about when you're in zip code 4, if you start to expand, you want to go to the border of zip code number 2, not just somewhere anywhere in that zip code in order to maintain a sterilization zone. That's what they mean by spatial contiguity. That if you have areas you're targeting that have a lot of borders with targeted areas, the possibility of cats migrating from the untargeted areas is much higher the more border area that you have, right? So this is what the original phase two when they were only targeting part of the city. That's what it looks like. The yellow are the borders between the targeted areas and the untargeted areas. And you can see how much of borders there were. There were a lot, right? There was a lot of places where cats, feeling population pressure, having met their carrying capacity, could migrate in to the areas where there were already cats. So as those populations of cats in the black areas were going down, there was an overflow of cats from the gray areas moving in to overwhelm any progress and actually to reverse it and make the population go up. So they didn't do this, but if they had asked me, I would have told them, when you're only targeting part of the city, you should have made this the border. You should have done everybody on the right and left the gray, left the area on the left untargeted. And then you would have had the smallest possible border area, and you would have mitigated migration and the vacuum effect. And you probably would have had much better results during phase two if they had drawn the line this way. So that's why it's so important that we choose our target areas wisely, so that they're not surrounded by untargeted areas and so that the borders are at a minimum. So at this point, Kristen, I think we're ready to take a break.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.